Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Coachella Valley Association of Governments Executive Committee for April 30th. The chairman, John Benoit, is out of town for a few days, and Joey Taganik, the vice chair, has had knee surgery. So you're stuck with the former chair, Yvonne Parks. Okay, we're going to have the roll call, please.
Dwight, Cathedral City.
Here.
Coachella.
Present.
Desert Hot Springs.
Here.
Indian Wells.
Present.
Indio.
Present.
Lachine.
Here.
Paw Desert.
Here.
Palm Springs.
Here.
Rancho Mirage.
Present.
Riverside County Sheriff District.
Here.
Riverside County 4th District. Sorry.
Here.
Alcayende. We have a forum.
Thank you. And we want to welcome Scott Hines, who will be mayor tomorrow when he is sworn in officially, but welcome. I did your introduction this evening. And with that, Scott, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Just place your hand over your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, this is the time for public comments. I have one public comment, but it's relative to one of the items on the agenda. But now, if you have any comments or want to speak on an agenda item, please complete one of these cards and turn it in to the clerk over here. And then make sure to put the item number that you want to speak on. All right. I don't hear any public comments. Executive Committee, any comments from any of the members?
Mayor, thank you. At your table, there is a flyer here for an event coming up at Cal State San Bernardino. There's their third annual Environmental and Sustainability Expo, which actually is on Friday, May 11th. But on the 10th, they are inviting elected officials from around the valley to come for an opening reception to meet some of the students that will be presenting the following day. These are middle school and high school students. So they would love to have you. They would also love, if any of you have any 939 environmental money left, they are looking for some $350 from each city, not from your general fund, but your 939 funds, to help pay for transportation for students from the middle schools over to the campus. The buses have all been ordered. The substitute teachers have all been ordered. Now they just want to make sure they can pay for it. So this would be a great event. We'd love to have everybody come on by the campus on Thursday night. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Yes,
yeah.
Supervisor.
Yeah, I'd like to report on the meeting of the Salton Sea Authority. And the Salton Sea Authority is made up of two counties, Imperial County, Riverside County, Imperial Irrigation District, Coachella Valley Water District, and the Torres Martinez Band of Indians. And the meeting was a very important one because our executive director has resigned for personal reasons. And at that meeting, we met and we appointed Andy Solange, who's been acting as a consultant. He's a former executive director and manager of the Eastern Municipal Water District and the San Ana Water Project Authority and other agencies, very highly qualified man in retirement. He'll be the acting director until we can pick a new director. At the meeting, we talked about the dedication of the members of the sea. All the members stepped up. They're fully dedicated to saving the sea, working with the legislature, trying to bring. We are appointed the committee rather than that. You know, the defunct committee was never met, and the legislature is not going to be funded. But those powers will be given to us. Back the Perez bill to do that. Seek $2 million in funds for feasibility study to get an EIR going for our sea plan. And also, rather than come back with a half-time executive director we had before, we're going to advertise for a full-time executive director. We're committing to success, not just a caretaker process, and you'll be hearing more. But we're going to go an all-out effort to move the Salton Sea project forward.
Yes.
I just wanted to thank everybody. We had another successful concert, both the Coachella Fest for 2 weekends and the Stagecoach. It took everyone's support, especially the county police and fire from all the other areas to help support it. And we just want to thank everyone for their support. It brought in a little over 200,000 people into the valley. And I think all the hotels and that should be happy. But, you know, it's a big undertaking to have that many emergency personnel, public safety, public works, and it took everyone to make that accomplishment. Thank you on behalf of the city. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Steve Coachella would also like to just thank everyone for attending the Coachella Music Festival. I'm just joking.
Actually, he loves that name.
I do, and so do like 100,000 people that come out this weekend. I wanted just to recognize and thank the staff for their technical support. Tom, Mr. Weigel here. We've had some challenges as it relates to $10 million allocation of funds for a great separation project for Avenue 52nd and Grateful Boulevard. Apparently, there were some issues in terms of it being 3 lanes, 2 lanes. I believe we've gotten that squared away. And I wanted just to acknowledge the technical support that we've received here through CBAG in working through those challenges. The city will be requesting of the Transportation Committee and eventually coming to the Executive Committee for the release of some of those dollars so that we can begin some of the mitigating impacts to the bridge that I'm referring to on 52nd and Grateful Boulevard. So I just wanted to again acknowledge the staff's technical support and certainly look forward to the Executive Committee support so that we can get that bridge underway. I know that there's some strict timelines that we need to meet in order to utilize those funds. If anyone recalls, those funds were moved over from Avenue 66. Supervisor John Benoit, through his leadership and the support of the Executive Committee, allowed those monies to be moved to complete what would be $20 million for a great separation in the city of Coachella. So just wanted to, again, thank the staff for helping us move through those technical difficulties, and we look forward to the support so that we can get that bridge underway sometime in the middle of next year. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Tom.
Well, on behalf of Vice Chairman Jeff Bruby, I want to express his apologies. He's stuck in a meeting in Riverside. I got a message in the last minute that he wouldn't be here, but he was very much looking forward to his first meeting.
Thank you. Okay, Tom.
Yeah, just two quick items. I know we've benefited from having a number of ribbon-cutting ceremonies in the western Coachella Valley in the past year. We have a very important ribbon cutting just at the south end of Coachella at Airport Boulevard and Avenue 56 on Friday. And you all, if you haven't gotten the notice, you all are certainly invited. It's at 10 a.m. On the bridge deck, and that interchange, Mayor, right, will be open as of Friday, and that's a big deal for the eastern part of the Coachella Valley. So if you can make it, that would be fantastic. And lastly, the mayor already mentioned that Joey DeConnick could not be here. As you know, his attendance record is pretty darn amazing, given how far he drives to get here, along with the supervisors, of course. And he has a pretty good excuse. A Get Well Soon card is making the rounds, so if you could sign that, and we'll get it to Joey DeConnick as soon as we possibly can. That's the extent of my comments.
Thank you. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the consent calendar.
Move approval.
Okay, we have a motion to approve and a second.
I'm trying to abstain from
it. You'll have two abstentions, Steve Coachella also.
Okay, we have two abstentions, Coachella and Rachel Mirage from the minutes. Otherwise, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving now to our discussion action, which is the first item on the agenda for that is 7A, approval of location and price of the 2012 General Assembly meeting.
No staff report. It's pretty straightforward, and that is we plan on having the General Assembly at the Classic Club in Palm Desert, and the price would be $50 per person. We do need a motion to accept the
to begin the contract negotiations with the Classic Club.
So. It isn't actually in Palm Desert, but I'll move through.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Palm Desert, a second by La Quinta. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Item number D, worst case scenario for operation of Roy's for fiscal year 2012-13, Aurora Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The Homelessness Committee has reviewed the reduction of county funding for all homeless shelters contracted with the county, and they ask that the technical advisory and executive committees be informed. Last year, the county contributed $1.2 million to the budget for Roy's Desert Resource Center. The operating budget is $1.8 million, so their contribution was approximately two-thirds of the budget. This year, due to fiscal constraints and loss of one-time funds, the county is projecting a contribution of $600,000, half of what was received from last year for this year. The county's proposed reduction in contributions to homeless shelters not only impacts Roy's, but also impacts the Coachella Valley Rescue Mission. The proposed reduced contribution to the Rescue Mission would be so small that the organization will have to close the doors to their emergency shelter for most of the year. CBAC staff has worked with County DPSS staff and the Operative Roy's to look at ways to reduce costs. Areas in the budget were discussed, including transportation, hours of operations, utilities, food, employee hourly rates, and workers' compensation. Attached in your staff report is a worksheet. The first column is the current budget for Roy's that reads 2011-2012. The next column is titled Scenario Number 1, which shows what the budget will look like with the county's reduced contribution and if we were to assume that the cities make the same contributions that they have this year. Given this, we will have to reduce the number of beds from 100 to 69 beds. So again, it appears to be a bleak picture for homelessness in Riverside County. The CV Rescue Mission's emergency shelter will need to shut down for two-thirds of the year. As you know, Marcus Village no longer operates an emergency shelter, and Roy's would have to reduce its beds to 69. Scenario 1 plus shows the budget with the county's reduced contribution. But if all the cities were to contribute $103,000, and that is the result of action taken back in September 2008. CVAC will be submitting grants as well. Our contract with the grant writer concluded in December. With the passing of my longtime program assistant, Valerie Franklin, in November, we combined the program assistant position with a management analyst position. We now have a new employee that I would like to introduce right now. Her name is Mary Kazunga. Mary, can you stand up? Mary is originally from Kenya and has her master's degree from Cal State Long Beach, and she has a solid grant writing background. She's getting up to speed with CVAG Life and is exploring several grant opportunities that will supplement the budget. We will keep you informed of the status of the county's contributions. That concludes staff remarks. There is no action on this item. As you know, Luthy Ramos-Watson is the chair of our Homelessness Committee. We also have a couple of members of the Homelessness Committee here, Scott Hines and Stephen Hernandez. If they would like to provide comment, as well as County Supervisor Ashley or Supervisor Stone with regard to the proposed county reduction to homeless shelters.
I'd just like to just make a general comment. You've been reading the paper, our budget, you know, like everybody's budget is bleak. I doubt everybody's going to step up and do the 103,000 because it's the economic reality. We are laying off nearly 300 people in order to try to get close to balancing budget. That is not going to get it done. Supervisor Stone and I are two deficit hawks pushing hard for a structurally balanced budget this year. In order to do that, we're going to have more layoffs. We have to structurally balance, or we have no chance we're going to lose it all the next year. I mean, we won't have enough reserves to go on. We have to do it this year. So we're not you know, I don't want to say that, you know, the county won't do help or find a way to help. But I tell you, it doesn't look good, okay, for us. And we have to structurally balance. So I think that we're going to have to look and to come up with a re-look at this, not just for more money, but look at the operation and see. We have to get to a deal where we have a long-term sustainable situation. And we just can't figure, well, we'll do, fix it this year, then next year. We've got to look at something sustainable long-term. If it means another funding source, we've got to look at it. So I'm telling you, if things don't look good, I can't speak for Supervisor Benoit, who's not here tonight. I can tell you, don't think we're going to be able to pull a rabbit out of a hat right now. It is really bleak, the county, and as we have to balance our budget in a sustainable way, and I think for Roy's, we need to find a way to do the same. Supervisor Stump?
I'll pretty much say ditto. We've been depending significantly on our reserves for the past 3.5 to 4 years. Our reserves about 3 or 4 years ago was about $300 million. Today it's about $140. And so we want to be able to balance our books and actually add to our reserves. For a county that's got a $5 billion budget, you can imagine that $140 million is not very much in case of a catastrophe that the county may encounter. So all supervisors have been very sensitive and very generous to the best of our ability in supporting all the homeless shelters in the county. And certainly Roy's Place is a special one because of Roy Wilson. But Roy's Place will receive probably a declining contribution. Our big center in the western and Riverside proper is going to be having cutbacks, and then we have a small one in the third district in Hemet is also going to be dramatically hit. So I wish we had better news. We're doing the best that we can. We do have a special program in the county right now for veterans. We received a grant. So I don't know if any of that grant is going to be coming this way or not. But we'll certainly look to see if there's a way that we can supplant this deficit. I certainly would work diligently with the supervisors, but actually to try to help fill the gap, and it's going to be a very difficult year.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Supervisors, for speaking on behalf of the homeless effort. I'm here speaking on behalf of the Homeless Committee. We understand everyone's budgetary challenges. We're not here to be alarmists. This is strictly an information item only. The reality is that the Coachella Valley at one time had 275 beds available for emergency shelter. The reality is going to be, should we have to work within our budgetary constraints, that we will maybe only have 69 beds available to the homeless population at a time in our nation's history when the demand is the highest, when families and children are suffering through tough economic times and are looking for our assistance to get back on their feet. The impact that this is going to have on our individual communities is immeasurable. The city of Palm Springs and the city of Indio certainly know firsthand what it's like to have to manage a large population of homelessness within our city limits. But now with the limited amount of resources, both financial and physical resources, the homeless population is going to be migrating between the two cities, and we're going to feel the impact throughout all of our cities. And it's not only going to be a visible impact, it's going to be an emotional impact to those who feel for the homeless community, for those individuals that live within our communities that right now volunteer their time to try to help their fellow man. But also, it's going to be an impact to our businesses. Throughout the history of the homeless effort here in the Coachella Valley, we've heard concerns from many businesses throughout the Coachella Valley that without the assistance of the homeless effort, their business would not succeed. Individuals that don't have a place to go when they are homeless to find resources to find their way out of homelessness end up congregating around our businesses, and that will negatively impact our businesses. So I ask all of you to please keep in mind the need is greater now more than ever. I know we are all challenged with our budget constraints, but we're just here to give you the information. What used to be a 275-bed community in Coachella Valley may now only be 69 beds, and there's going to be a ripple effect everywhere within our communities. We just wanted to give you that information. Thank you for the time, Chair.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also would like to second some of the comments that have been made by Lupe today. and remind the folks at this table that this issue is a regional issue. This is not an east versus west. Though Roy's is physically and geographically located in the West Valley, it services people from all across the valley. Roy's provides some niche services that Martha's and the CV Rescue Mission do not. First of all, it is a secular-based homeless shelter, which is important to some people who do not have a religious affiliation and want to be in a place where that is not part of the rehabilitative program. And that's important, I think, that we offer that as a government entity. Secondly, Roy's really caters, in many cases, to families. There's a policy at Roy's that does not allow people who have criminal records to be in that facility, and therefore is considered a very safe harbor, particularly for women who experience domestic abuse. And that is a unique thing that Roy's offers to all 10 of our communities that are here part of CBAG. I think that we as leaders have to not just sit here and accept this, but we need to get creative to find ways to bridge the funding gap. One of those things that we as mayors, or soon to be mayors, can do is to help find community leaders within each of our cities to be part of the new foundation board that is being created for Roy's. The Homeless Committee has created, or is in the process of creating, a standalone nonprofit that will be able to fundraise through the private sector to bridge the financing gaps that we have as government entities that are falling short on our commitment to this facility. So I know in Rancho Mirage, we've recruited now two different people from our community who have a lot of energy and a passion for this issue and have the ability to raise money to be part of the Roy's Foundation board. So I would ask the mayors at this table today to think about community members within your community who can have a big impact by becoming volunteers and part of the board and connect them with Aurora, who can put them in touch with the right people on the board. The other thing is this is the budgeting time for our cities. For those cities who do not fund the shelter, who have had to cut in recent months, I would ask you to at least please include this in your budgeting discussions this year. Take a second look at this. Think about the impact and where we're at today. If you haven't funded in the past or you've had to cut funding in the last few years, can you please at least put this as a line item and consider this in your budgeting process during this time of the year to see if there's any way you can contribute even something to Roy's to, if anything, symbolically show your regional support to this effort that we all committed to several years ago. And last but not least, be an ambassador for the shelter every time you have a microphone in front of your face. We often at Rancho Mirage City Council meetings talk about the need of the homeless, almost every single meeting. And you never know where that will go. In fact, today I want to present to Aurora $1,531 that was raised recently at a pancake breakfast in Rancho Mirage because some citizens responded to the call for action that we as elected members called for in our city council meeting. What's interesting about this $1,531, which will fund a bed and a half for a month, is that this came from one of our affordable housing projects. It was the low-income people in our city that saw this as a need, that connect with the issue, and stepped up and threw a big pancake fundraiser, and this is a lot of money for them. Many of them sacrificed things to be able to contribute to this. And I think that this is a testament, and it's a shame on you, to a lot of us in this room, when low-income people step up and give what they have to support this effort, and not the rest of us sit back and kind of say, oh, well, sorry, it's just going to happen. We have to accept it because times are tough. We have an obligation to get creative, to find other ways to raise it. If we can't squeeze it out of our city budgets, then we as leaders of our community need to find ways to inspire our communities to step up and help with this effort. So I'll get off my soapbox right now because this issue is very important to me, but I want to give this money to Aurora, and hopefully we'll continue bringing these to her.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chairwoman, I have the opportunity to sit as an alternate on this. I have attended the last couple of meetings, and I'd like the others in the room to know that the nonprofit world is looking into how they might help out also. Martha's Village, it's $13 a bed. The Coachella Valley Rescue Mission is $17 a bed. And Roy's is $51 a bed. Trying to understand why such a significant difference in cost, and to have the nonprofit world come forward and help find ways to reduce costs at Roy's and still provide the services that are needed.
Thank you.
Yes.
What is the status of 501c3 for the foundation?
It's done.
It is moving forward. As a matter of fact, they have received approval for their 501c3 number just recently, so it should be coming within the next couple of weeks. So they're very, very pleased with that. They have approximately 7 members on their board, and recently Rabobank, the vice president, general manager for the Rabobank in Palm Springs, just joined. It continues to expand and move forward.
That would be a good opportunity to have a media event to deal with a lot of the things that Scott's talking about, to raise awareness when that comes through. You get your SID number and go from there and have some sort of media event around it. It can be a fundraiser as well.
I think people should know that Mayor Hansen personally funded the costs that were incurred for incorporating that 501c3, and he was moved that day and personally wrote a check to make that happen.
Thank you, Mayor Hansen.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Okay, I don't see any more comments. I will move on to item C, the Green for Life Program and Consultant Budget Augmentation. Katie Burrows.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's always inspiring to hear about the great things that happen at CBAG, and we're fortunate to be able to, on the environmental front, be making some great strides. I want to take some of you who participated back to 2009 at the Coachella Valley Energy Summit, and some of you were mayors at the time, or at least on council. And actually, at that time, all of the Coachella Valley cities and the county signed what we call the Sustainability Pledge. The Green for Life project really builds on the efforts that have been made by many cities to do things that will help our communities and help our residents save funds. And in these economic times, that's particularly important. And I think it's a growing focus for what we're trying to do with the Green for Life program. I just want to give you a very brief update on the progress of the program, and then I'm going to ask the chair of our Energy and Environmental Resources Committee, Mayor Pineda, to update you as well. We are making good progress. This is a program, as you might recall, that is funded through a grant from the California Public Utilities Commission and Southern California Edison. Our valley received one of the largest awards given by Edison, and it's making it possible for us to do a variety of things. One of those efforts is a green building policy that really brings together a lot of things that have been done over the valley in terms of recycling, in terms of energy efficiency, and tries to encourage folks, and particularly in existing buildings where a lot of those savings are more possible, to find ways that they could be more energy efficient and at the same time save money. One piece of that we're excited about is we're looking at developing an online tool, a web tool, and perhaps a phone app that could help folks to, if they have a small amount of money, find ways that cost little or nothing to upgrade their properties. If they have some money or if they're doing a major remodel project, they might be able to do some energy efficiency measures at the same time. We're also working on making city facilities more efficient, and one of the features of this program is developing energy action plans. I want to highlight that the city of Cathedral City completed an energy action plan in just recently in March. Actually, they are now at what we call the gold level in our energy partnership because of the significant energy savings and the cost savings associated with that. Another feature of the program is a lot of different tools that help make city hall more energy efficient. We have a benchmarking or a way to rate buildings to determine if they're Energy Star. It turns out that Riverside County was recently in the top 10 list of buildings or communities in the country with Energy Star rated buildings. And I know that most of those buildings were on the west side of the county where our supervisors were actively working on those issues. But here in the Coachella Valley, there was a small group of buildings, in fact, mostly school district buildings, that were included in those Energy Star ratings, so that was exciting. We're also putting together another element of this, which is building on the greenhouse gas inventory that was done here in the Coachella Valley several years ago, individual inventories for each city, and a climate action planning process that we'll be bringing through CBAG that will allow goals to be set. And I think these are tools that will be very beneficial in getting grants and in meeting a lot of the state mandates with funds that have been provided through the support from Edison and the PUC so that your staff don't have to expend money on those in other ways. As part of the that we have been identifying a variety of costs. This program, as I mentioned, is funded by Edison. The staff costs and all the time we spend with jurisdictions are reimbursed by Southern California Edison, and we have a budget that was approved by Edison when we started. Over time, we have a variety of program needs, and before you tonight, we have a request for an allocation to our consultant team of $187,800. That's split between two very strong consultant teams we have, Terra Nova and EcoMotion. They are doing a lot of work, and we're trying to really ease the burden on your staffs by not burdening them with a lot of these elements while still allowing us to accomplish a lot of good energy efficiency measures. Some of the things that this will support are we're starting to reach out to contractors and members of the community to identify and train contractors in energy efficiency tools and encourage them to seek and promote retrofits and rehabs to homes that would help to promote their business. A portion of the funds would go towards that. As I mentioned already, we're also looking at a website tool, and part of the staff request is for staff to seek bids for up to $100,000 for a web tool that would help property owners figure out what's the most cost-effective way to improve their properties and make them more energy efficient and save money. We also are working on a cost-effectiveness study that will help to describe the benefits of green building and some of the relatively minor impacts that that might have on a project budget while achieving great benefits for property owners. Those are some of the elements of the program. Another one of them that we're working on more closely is we want to make the program, which is funded by Edison through the end of this fall in October, last. And we are now working with College of the Desert, the U.S. Green Building Council, and others to look at ways that we could set up training programs and certifications and energy knowledge base that would help contractors, would help city staff, and would help build that infrastructure to support a lot of things that we think will be a benefit to not only our community but our economy. That would include funds to EcoMotion to work with us in that program. These are all not to exceed amounts, billed on a time and materials basis. So we're excited right now. We have recently met with Southern California Edison. They are very pleased with the regional approach that's being taken here at CBEG to encourage energy efficiency and sustainability. With that, I'd like to ask Mayor Pinier to provide an update from the Energy and Environmental Resources Committee.
Thank you, Katie. I don't think you've left much for me to say. But we had a great the meeting a couple of weeks ago where Terra Nova and EcoMotion came in to the ENA committee. A few of you sit on that. It was regarding the green building program. It was just absolutely excellent. It's a voluntary program. It's not mandatory. Some cities are mandatory, though, like Scottsdale, but this is a voluntary program, and it was an excellent presentation. I've got to tell you, and at those E&E meetings, I just want to thank all the cities that are doing so much different things within sustainability, being green, because you're all doing wonderful things. Whether you all know it or not, your staff has been absolutely terrific. That kind of gets reported through E&E. We had a great discussion on how we continue to move forward. The inventory, I think that the climate action plan that Katie mentioned is something that's still ongoing and we're refining and bringing along. And I counted there, I think, four mayors here, Kathy and myself and Yvonne and Don, I think, that actually signed the pledge in 2009. I think this is one of the great things, and I'm going to ask Katie, this is hot off the press. We are actually measuring and accounting for what we signed on that day. And we don't talk about it at all in meetings, but we actually are tracking the items that we signed on that pledge. So we will get that out to you so you can see the progress that we continue to make within the E&E committee. And again, I think it's wonderful. This is paid for. And I want to thank the staff, too, because we continue to lead in new ways within sustainability efforts here in Coachella Valley. So, Katie, thank you for my additional comments.
Are there any other comments? If not, entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
And we have a motion. Who was the motion?
Stone.
And the second was Ben Miller, India. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Now we'll move on to item 7E,
which is the Establish the Plug-in Electric Vehicle Coordinating Council.
Thank you, Mayor Parks. I'll make this very brief. As described in your staff report, we're very excited about the $200,000 in funding that CPEC has been awarded by the Energy Commission to develop a regional plug-in electric vehicle plan. This will involve a lot of different elements, including working with staffs and the marketing and the private industry, the dealers who are now selling electric vehicles and need electric vehicles. There is a tie to the Parkway 111 as well in the program. Most of the information, or all the information, is really in your staff report. What we're asking you to do tonight is to establish officially a plug-in electric vehicle coordinating council. That would be a group that would involve the Energy and Environmental Resources Committee and some additional members. Staff is recommending Southern California Edison and Imperial Irrigation District be appointed to that group, as well as representatives of the electric car industry. And the recommendation from the Technical Advisory Committee and E&E was that you also appoint two members from the Technical Planning Subcommittee, the planning directors, to participate in that group. We're excited about the launch of this project. We anticipate, we'd actually like to have the E&E and the Coordinating Council meet officially at the next meeting in May. Basically, the staff report provides all the information. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Supervisor Stone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, congratulations on receiving this grant. I hope that we can do something that's innovative in the western part of the county. There's a race going on competitively amongst the automobile manufacturers. You know, we first saw the hybrids that were out there. Prius now has a plug-in hybrid, gasoline and battery-powered. Nissan has their Leaf. Honda's coming out with an electric vehicle this summer. The only problem with those two manufacturers is you can't get a large range. You might get 100, 150 miles if you don't use air conditioning. And out here, we use air conditioning. You're probably going to use that electricity pretty fast. But there's a race in this market. I'm sure many of you have heard of the company Tesla. They're coming out with their assembly line models now. They had a Roadster that was handmade, but they have this new S model that's coming out. I'm not a spokesperson for them, but their car is going to have a range of 300 miles, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on domestic and foreign automobile manufacturers to step up the range on these vehicles so that in 2015, when we expect these charging stations to hopefully be master planned within this community, we need to have these charging systems in place, including a quick charge. You know, you can't sit there and let a car sit overnight. With a quick charge, you can get these Teslas and these other cars charged in 3 hours. So there's a lot of great innovations happening out there, and I think as you continue to see unrest in the Middle East, people are going to experience higher gas prices, and these electric vehicles are just a magnificent way to charge them at night at home when the heat is not there, and you wake up in the morning and hopefully you have a car that can go 200 or 300 miles on the charge, and it's significantly going to reduce our dependence on foreign oil, and it's going to really help see the Green for Life program achieve their goals. So this is a tidal wave that is going to hit, and I think the Coachella Valley is a great place to get this infrastructure in place. And great job in getting the grant. And I'll move the item.
I'll second.
Okay, second.
We have a motion by was it Supervisor Stone, and we have 2 seconds. One by Puye, one by Puye.
Give it to the tiger.
Puye was first in line, so that's second by Puye. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Katie. And now we're going to move on to E, consider memorandum of understanding among CBAG, Riverside County, and the City of La Quinta regarding widening Fred Loring Drive between Adams and Port Maria Road. Alan.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In 1988, when Measure A was first approved, there were four projects that were identified as being extremely important to complete during that Measure A program. All of those projects have been completed except for one portion of the Fred Loring Drive project, and tonight we're going to discuss that portion. The segment of Fredway Drive between Adams Street and Port Maria Drive is partially in the city of La Quinta and partially in Riverside County. The city and the county have now come to an agreement, which is recognized by this MOU, which you have in your packet, which allows for the construction of six travel lanes that does not greatly affect access to residential properties on either side of the road. The construction of this street will require moving the center line south by several feet, including sidewalk and a sound wall, and raising the pavement grade on the north side of the north half of the street to accommodate the elevated driveways which serve the residents there. Well, the net effect of this MOU is that the city of La Quinta will bear no cost for the street widening project in exchange for widening the roadway into the city right-of-way. The MOU was approved by the city of La Quinta and is now being presented for CBAG's approval. A standard reimbursement agreement already exists between CBAG and Riverside County, which was entered in 2008, and that provides for engineering design and preparation of environmental documents for the Fredway Drive project. There will need to be an amendment to that agreement presented prior to construction once Riverside County, as lead agency, has finalized engineering plans and construction cost estimates, and that will include the city of La Quinta and will formalize the elements of the MOU. There is no cost involved in approval of the MOU, and a future amendment to the reimbursement agreement will provide that CBAG will be responsible for 75% of the qualified project costs for widening Fred Marine Drive from Adams Street to Port Maria Road. As you're probably all aware, the project has been subject of a vigorous negotiation between Riverside County and the city of La Quinta. At one time, there was the possibility that the project would cost well over $20 million and could have involved the acquisition of, I think, 13 homes in order to make it work. The recommendation today is that the executive committee approve the memorandum of understanding between or among CBAG, Riverside County, and the city of La Quinta regarding widening of Fred Marine Drive between Adams Street and Port Maria Road, and your Transportation Committee and Technical Advisory Committee have concurred with this recommendation. I'm glad to answer your questions.
Any comments?
I move approval.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Bob Spiegel from Palm Desert and a second by Lynn Miller Indio. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving now on to item number F, improvements at intersection of Highway 111 and Washington Street. Alan?
City of La Quinta has completed a transportation demand management study to explore solutions to the traffic congestion issues facing motorists along the Washington Street and Highway 111 commercial corridors. A number of potential improvements were considered during this process. One prominent recommendation was to add an additional left turn lane on both the northbound and southbound Washington Street. That would provide for a total of three left turn lanes in both directions. And would add a right turn lane for southbound, eastbound, and westbound traffic, and would eliminate the pedestrian crossing on the west side of the intersection, which would otherwise require pedestrians to cross 11 vehicle travel lanes. While the intersection of Washington and Highway 11 itself is not separately ranked in the 2010 update of the TPDS, it's obvious that there needs to be something done at that intersection to improve traffic control. The next several paragraphs in the staff report identify how the intersection is connected to several segments of projects that are included in the 2010 and 2005, and I think earlier TPDS projects. And if you analyze those projects, you'll see, as I have, that the intersection itself would rank very highly. It would rank in the top 30 of the TPDS projects and would be considered among the top 10%, and therefore would be very highly ranked and justified to receive funding at this time. As indicated in the letter from the city of La Quinta, they are requesting the CBAG provide funding assistance for the project. The total estimated cost is $776,644. The request is for CBAG to provide regional funds of 75%, the estimated amount of $582,483. The city has indicated their intention to complete this project within 12 months. The recommendation tonight is that CBAG Executive Committee approve regional funds in the amount not to exceed $582,483 to complete the operational improvements at the intersection of Highway 111 Washington Street, and to authorize establishing the time trigger as described in the staff report for the project to begin within 2 years of the date of execution of the reimbursement agreement for this project with the City of Waukegan. And both your Transportation Committee and your TAC have approved or concurred in this recommendation.
Madam Chair, I have a quick question. So what's to say that this won't change if the price changes and the cost share changes for Waukegan? What guarantee does the city have that these costs are firm costs?
They preliminarily designed the intersection.
What guarantee does a jurisdiction have that the cost being cited stated in the report are firm costs?
Well, I suppose we can set it up to exceed and hold it.
I'm just asking a question.
I'll try to respond. There is no guarantee. It's typical for CBAC to enter into these agreements with every one of our jurisdictions based on engineers' estimates. In recent years, those engineers' estimates have been relatively high. We're hoping that's the case on this project as well, but one never knows. If the project actual costs come in over, we'll certainly bring that back to you.
And if it goes under?
We're glad to pay.
We just pay 75% of the actual cost.
So there's no guarantee on cost until the job is in construction, and then it's subject to change?
Yes, just like all of our projects.
Good. Napalm Drive is under budget and on time, by the way.
Good.
Yes.
We'll talk about that next.
Okay, any other comments?
Just a quick comment. This intersection's got to be one of the worst in the world. A lot of complaints from businesses and the community because it'll back up in the morning and in the evening several blocks, people trying to make a left-hand turn. It's just staggering when you see the number of cars trying to get through that intersection. And we've looked at this, how to control this thing and how to move traffic, and synchronization doesn't seem to totally do the job. It's just a matter of over traffic, just number of vehicles and that. So if we get more golf carts on the road, maybe we'll eliminate part of this problem and that. But it is a major disaster at times.
Mary, question for Mary. I'm using that intersection quite a bit, as I do. How are you going to get people to walk across there? The amount of, given the number of lanes and the amount of time it takes people to cross a street there, is there any thought as to how you're going to get people back and forth? Within the perspective?
Unless they're going to stay in the island in the center, move only halfway over and then halfway across. It is a dangerous thing, and we see people with, baby carriages and things like that trying to get across the street, and there's just not any time. And we deal with the issue with synchronization, trying to give them enough time to get from point A to point B across the street. And we're not going to widen the road any because there's just no room. You've got businesses built right up to the intersections there. So it's not going to change the dimension across from one side to the other.
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, was that Supervisor Ashley? Stone. Okay. And second by Hanson. Hanson.
Yes, that would be Doug Hanson, Mayor of Indian Wells.
That's right.
At least for this one.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving now on to item G, the local proportionate share calculation for Dave Palm Drive Interchange project as prepared by Urban Crossroads. Michael Schober.
Thank you. As with the Bob Hope and Indian Canyon Interchanges projects, a new proportionate share has been prepared for the Dave Palm Interchange. Urban Crossroads completed that report, and the results are as indicated in the staff report. The TTAS, the Transportation Committee, and the TAC have all reviewed the report, and a number of concerns were raised at each of those levels. The first was that Palm Springs was concerned about the apparent development that was in areas that probably couldn't have development, for example, the Whitewater River. Palm Desert objected to being included in the calculations at all. Desert Hot Springs objected to similar concerns that were raised by Palm Springs. Cathedral City objected to the shares, especially the drastic reduction in the proportion share for the city of Rancho Mirage. After a lengthy discussion at each of those levels, TCAS recommended approval of the report and the proportion of shares contained therein by a vote of 5-3. The Transportation Committee did not send any recommendation, but they did suggest that a special meeting be held between the Transportation or the TAC and the TCAS to go over the report in more detail. And the TAC recommended approval, as did the TCAS, on a vote of 6-4. They also decided that it was a good idea to have a study session, and that was held on April 16th. A number of people from the, especially the cities that had the most concerns over the report, attended, and it was a very good discussion. However, that, there was no actual recommendation that came to come out of that, but they, the group did decide that in the future that these proportion shares be done at an earlier date. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them. In the audience tonight is Carlton Waters, who prepared the report, and if there are technical questions, I defer to him.
I have a comment. When the Monterey Exchange was put in, the exchange was paid for by Rancho Mirage and Palm Desert. Unfortunately, we're at the, and fortunately too, we're at the center of the valley. So we're going to pay for every interchange that comes along, it looks like. And I don't think it's right that we should be paying for this one.
Any other comments?
Yes, certainly. I've got several comments. One is I am deeply concerned that the changes are being done after the contract has been let. I'm also greatly disturbed, no offense to Rancho Mirage, but Rancho Mirage has gone from 15% to 4.3%, and I guess I'm trying to understand how residents of Rancho Mirage get in and out of the valley. They must go by helicopter because, quite frankly, their share of all the interchanges has been greatly and substantially reduced. Section 19, which is a large portion which will increase the city of Rancho Mirage by 25% in rooftops, a 500-room hotel, and three million square feet of retail in the Bob Hope Ramon Road area, their fee was cut where that was concerned in the past. And yet, we may be ahead of schedule and under budget for CBAC's budget, but we are way over budget for Cathedral City's budget. We have gone from 49% to 54%. And that makes absolutely no sense. And you've done it midstream in the middle of the contract. Hence my question before Mayor Radolf about, is this contract subject to change? Are these prices subject to change in a win? Because, quite frankly, that's what's happening to Cathedral City. Yeah. It has changed after the bid has gone out, after we budgeted, after it's all been done. Oh, by the way, we've made a change. It doesn't work. And you're going to have a significant impact on Jefferson. Your costs on Jefferson are higher than probably what they should be. But
yeah, we don't abut the freeway in anywhere.
Exactly. And you're going to be...
But sick. We've been paying for it on Washington for years.
So, and we understand that the DeBald interchange has been on the books. Caltrans has approved it. There is letter and documentations from Rancho Mirage saying that interchange will go in over their dead body. It's in your package. No, no, in a lot of ways, I know. So, I really wish that this would go back to the consultant for reevaluation and help us understand why their share has gone down and ours has significantly increased, especially midway in the middle of a contract, because that makes no sense. Had we gone into this with a serious set figure, probably wouldn't be having this discussion. But having this discussion now when the contracts have been let and increasing our share by 5% was just unacceptable.
Well, as far as the dollar amount, I mean, the budget or the bids have come in a lot less. So I think we calculated, what, about 2 or 3 years ago, Alan?
First,
about what it would be. And so your out-of-pocket dollars, I think, are going to be less, even though the percentage is higher.
Michael, it's still $125,000 more than we budgeted. That's a police officer. I'm going to be cutting 60 employees. I'm going to be cutting 24 people off my police force. $125,000 would save one of those officers.
I understand what you're saying. Now, as far as the actual technical reasons why your percentage is going to bond and defer your comments,
why don't we take additional questions or comments so that the consultant can address all of them at one fell swoop?
Madam Chair, questions regarding
I believe that Rancho Mirage, soon to be mayor,
that's right.
Scott Hines is next, and then Mayor Garcia.
Got a new hairstyle today, too.
That's my Eduardo Garcia wannabe hair.
Is that a good hair?
Well, thank you.
I have a couple questions for the consultant. If from 2003 to 2010 an additional interchange was added into the mix, would that not alter the percentages in your study?
I'm not the consultant.
That's right, so right.
Specifically, sir, the Duval interchange did not exist when the 2003 calculations were done. However, the Duval interchange was added post-2003, and would that not, in fact, alter the percentages that certain cities would have, and why would that be so?
You are absolutely correct that the Duval interchange, as well as the Landau interchange, were not part of the model of the roadway network system back in 2003, and therefore, even at the time that the Rancho Mirage general plan traffic study was prepared, you could look at the numbers in that traffic report and see that the residents of areas along Duval Drive clearly come in Duval Drive to either Ramon Road or 30th, and if you're going towards the freeway and the east, you go down Ramon Road to the Duval Hope Interchange, and if you're going to go down the freeway towards the west, then you made your way over on 30th or Ramon and up Dave Palm to access the freeway. At this point, because both those interchanges are part of the TPPS, they are included in the analysis as part of the fair share calculations, and that is one of the single largest factors that affected the changes in percentages that we observed between 2003 and now.
Now, also, if cities were to shift, for example, their city limit boundaries or change their sphere of influence, for example, if one city gave up 4,400 acres and an adjoining city then took on that 4,400 acres as part of their sphere of influence, would that not also alter the percentages of these intersections?
Absolutely.
And how does that play in this particular calculation?
For each of the interchanges that have been analyzed, there has been a concerted effort to obtain and then reflect ongoing changes to city boundaries. One of the largest that occurred here just in the last go-round that we've been through was the city of Desert Hot Springs actually went ahead and incorporated quite a bit of area headed south down towards the 10 freeway. One of the questions that was raised is, well, isn't that a lot of that land in the MSHCP? And we actually took a look at the report and did confirm that of those four or five traffic analysis zones, at least half of them had very limited development that would be consistent with development that would occur, you know, in the smaller areas surrounding the MSHCP areas would not be expected to have development.
And yet some development is possible, therefore it would affect the percentages.
Yes.
Right. So our city has elected to not grow. We have elected to give up 4,400 acres in the annexation area across the I-10, and we have chosen to hold and remain a small city. We are also opposed to the Duval intersection for a myriad of reasons, and from a policy position, do not want that intersection to ever be built. And it was not part of the 2003. Cathedral City has chosen to grow their city. They have taken on 4,400 more acres, and LAFCO has approved that annexation. And we support their decision to grow their city so that they can increase their tax basis and be able to be fiscally healthy. However, these policy decisions that have been made by Cathedral City since 2003 in the last study have directly impacted in which the data in which is being used to calculate these percentages. Ours has gone down because we have chosen not to grow. And because we now have another interchange that we don't want, that we will have to pay for at some point in the future. We also support Cathedral City's motion to have the study recalculated. However, we would only support that if the Duval interchange was removed for at least the next 20 years from the TPPS. Therefore, that would innumerably increase our share to the Date Palm interchange, and we would be okay with that if, in fact, the data were recalculated. I would also like to add that though our fees were cut on the Bob Hope interchange, as it was for all of you, this was done because stimulus dollars came forward and we received grants and all of us paid less. But our percentage on the Bob Hope interchange remained constant and the same. So I want to clarify that point. We want to pay our fair share, and we're certainly open to that, but we think it sets an incredibly dangerous precedent if we are to go in and receive results from a consultant who's highly qualified that we've all agreed to hire, but with the results don't come back the way we like them, we arbitrarily single out individual cities to pay more or to pay less because we simply don't like the results that came back. So either we stick with the 4.3% that the data clearly shows is our fair share, or we're open to a recalibration if, in fact, the Duval interchange is removed from the TPPS.
One clarification, Carlton. Now, there's discussion of sphere of influence. It's actually incorporation of city boundaries or change in this actually corporate limits of a city that affect the study, not just sphere of influence.
That is correct. It is the incorporated limits that have been respected.
All right. Just wanted everybody to understand
and we have not incorporated. Our city has not grown.
Just a couple of comments. If you look at your staff report, Rancho Mirage's share of the Bob Hope interchange went down from 18.8% to 11.3%. Cathedral City did not challenge that because of our pending sphere of influence increase in 1,000 Palms. We agreed that that was going to be an increase because of the potential of an annexation. We also didn't challenge the fact that the county went down. We were also told by the consultant that's here today that we would see an increase and probably see an increase in the Rancho Mirage's share on Bob Hope. Now, of course, that's not true. Cathedral City has also agreed, based on the recommendation of CBAG staff, to stop all work on the Duval interchange because of lack of resources of CBAG. So for Rancho Mirage to try and get a 20-year delay on a very needed project is disingenuous at best. They have consistently been able to tweak the system, whether it's through this consultant or another one, to financially advantage themselves. And Cathedral City has quietly agreed to pay the increased share of cost. This is the first time that we have stepped up and said, it's not right, it's not fair. And honestly, for Mr. Spiegel, Cathedral City agreed, Palm Desert shouldn't have to pay for Date Palm. That's not right either.
Thank you.
So, you know, it's not right whether, you know, I sit as vice chair of transportation, and I made the motion to move it forward to this body because the transportation committee had been fighting over this for 6 months. That doesn't do any good either. So this group has to make a decision one way or another. Cathedral City will live with whatever's decided. But other cities that are going to come in with some very expensive road projects, as was mentioned, be very well aware that so long as things are being done the way they are, your numbers you can't take into the bank because it's going to change.
Mayor Garcia?
Well, that being said, we certainly, with many of the major infrastructure projects moving eastward, certainly have a concern about moving targets as it relates to these numbers. Although we don't have a direct, we're not directly impacted here, we certainly have a concern moving forward with these particular formulas. I know that Mr. Hines did offer to send this back If that is the consensus of this body, I would motion, if that was your direction, I would second that motion to bring this back and see what these numbers reflect after some, I guess...
Mayor Garcia, I'd just like to make one correction. He wanted one condition, and that was to take the Duval intersection off the table and never bring it up again.
That I'm not going to.
20 years.
20 years. Okay. 20 years.
I'm open. Just again, I'm open to his suggestion of continuing this item to continue to dialogue this issue.
Mayor Garcia, what about the Duval? Do we take that off the table altogether? Is that what you're recommending? Duval Valley not have another interchange?
My concern is not the Duval Road. My concern is the share that has increased and how these numbers can continue to move. The city of Coachella has a number of major infrastructure projects that we would hate to see this same scenario occur. So in terms of the Duval, I leave that up for discussion.
Can we bifurcate those two issues?
I would say so.
There has been a reduction from $8 million to $2 million in the costs. I'm sorry, I didn't see you, Mr. Pugliese. Mayor Pugliese.
You got the mayor right, Doc.
Up Palm Springs.
Yeah. Up Palm Springs.
I certainly understand the frustrations because Palm Springs, we have that one, this issue for a long time, the Palm Desert. The city of Palm Springs has voted against us a couple of different times. Our staff did go, our staff went to the April 16th meeting, and I don't think a recalculation is going to change things too much. I just don't. If we want to talk about a policy change, that's a whole different question. But I met with my public work department today, a long meeting on the 16th, and we're gonna support this and move it forward. If you want to talk about policy change down the road, that's a different question. We're going to support it tonight.
Mr. Kirk, how do you weigh in on this?
I think the frustration about timing is justified. And if you remember, this started with a question asked by the county about did the 2003 shares make good sense given changes in boundaries and the like. A study was commissioned by the county and redone by CBAG at your direction. We've been working on this for a number of months. I tend to agree with the mayor of Palm Springs that the reanalysis may not make a major change. However, it could be done, and we could certainly pull out either certain jurisdictions and or certain improvements and direct the consultant to go back and rerun the analysis. However, you know, there are going to be concerns about methodology, particularly when one doesn't like the results. And my guess is that's going to happen again, regardless of how many times we do this. But staff could certainly rerun the analysis, and I do want to echo again Mayor Park's point. That is, at least we have a $2 million problem as opposed to an $8 million problem, thanks to some federal STP funds that were applied to this project last year. So everybody is coming out better, but given budget realities in our jurisdictions, I understand how challenging this can be.
Thank you.
The other challenge, quite frankly, is that contracts can't be changed midstream. There's got to be a policy change, and we have tried to change this policy on a number of occasions and have not succeeded. We don't seem to be making any headway with CBAG on looking at policy changes. The change in policy of looking at grants when grants are submitted, and why we spend time with staff and how staff apply for grants only not to be given the full credit for those. So unless we go back and look at that again, my motion is that we have the consultant reevaluate this at the moment, come back with it, and that we have a policy that says once a commitment is made before bids are, right after bids are open, you don't go back and make changes to what's already been decided.
Just really quickly, I just want to be clear that we take great offense at an accusation that we had somehow rigged these numbers or tweaked these numbers. We, like all of you, agreed to a study. The results came back, and these are the percentages. We did not have any undue influence on this. We accept the numbers of the study. We would accept the numbers of a recalculation. It's why we hire independent third-party consultants. I want to be on the record with that.
Thank you. Mayor Miller.
I can concur with Mr. Pugnet. I don't know how we kicked this can down the road for quite a while. Eventually, the concrete equilibrium will go with it. What kind of cost are we looking at to reevaluate again? That's going to put on top of it. And then if we do it, the caveat should be that whatever the numbers come out, we all accept it. If we're going to do it again. I don't see how we can continue to move this down. If they want to go ahead and have it re-submitted for, I guess you want to call it, different calculation numbers, then we should agree after that. They come up, they are what they are, and we move on. And then, you know, Mr. Pugnet or Mayor Pugnet said that the policy needs to be looked at to change. We do have a major intersection coming in Jefferson, which is going to be high, so we don't like the idea of numbers changing. But, I mean, eventually we just got to be done with this and done and move on.
With respect to one of the points and questions, I assume that the cost would be under $12,000 to recalculate. Is that fair, Carlton? Approximately $5,000.
Could be a moving number.
I'll guarantee that one. The key, what staff would need, if you're going to do the study again, is the conditions. What direction do we have for the conditions?
Well, I believe that Mayor DeRosa made a motion.
You know, I'd be willing to withdraw that motion, save the $5,000, and go back to the original allocation that was in the staff report.
The 2003 allocation?
The 2000?
Yes.
So you're moving the 2003 recommendation?
That would be marked, yes.
I'll second the 2003 recommendation.
Okay, is there any discussion on that?
So the county is okay with that? Paying additional support?
That's fine.
There's a motion and a second. Okay, there is a motion and a second. Let's, okay, all those in favor of going back, roll call. All those in favor of going back to 2003 calculations?
Aye.
Okay.
I think there's going to be a roll call.
Cathedral City?
Aye.
Coachella?
Abstain.
Desert Hot Springs?
No.
Indian Wells?
No.
Indio?
Nay.
La Quinta?
No.
Palm Desert?
Yes.
Palm Springs?
No.
Rancho Mirage?
No.
Verusa County 3rd District?
No.
Verusa County 5th District?
No.
And those happened. Then I will accept Mayor Miller's motion of going back for the study, $5,000.
Oh, we will need guidance on what we're studying, whether all the jurisdictions identified as a part of the 2012 report are in or not, and whether the Duval interchange would be considered in the analysis.
I'd like to make a motion that we recalibrate.
Glenn, did you make the motion?
To recalculate
this?
I said I would make the motion to recalculate this if we recalculate the thing, what the cost is, and that if, whenever it's done, we accept what
it is. With no condition.
Add with no condition, right. So what it is, I doubt it's going to change my personal opinion. But then that way there's not another discussion.
I will second that motion.
Just for clarification, recalculating, are there any changes in terms of the assumptions? One relates to Duval Interchange, and the other, the cities that are considered for contribution. And right now there are, cities and county, there are six. Are they all in the reanalysis?
Plus,
if you were going to do a reanalysis, why wouldn't you include everyone?
So the only condition is that we're removing Duval Interchange.
No.
There's no sense to be calculating.
If you do it without conditions, is it going to change? Is it going to change?
If there are no changes to the socioeconomic data, no change to the roadway network, the results will be identical.
Just $5,000 for nothing.
Where is section 19? Okay. Mayor Pugnet.
To Supervisor Ashley's point, Palm Springs certainly is not going to support this motion. If you want to recalculate it, use a different firm and start over, which is not wise because it costs you a lot more money. You just said it's going to come back basically the same. The only way would be if you went and hired somebody else that did it. They've done it over and over again. We do not support that motion strongly.
Can I get just a little bit of background in terms of the Duval growth that we're talking about here, in terms of the need, the projected growth? Just get a little bit of some...
Carlton, if you want to give it a shot, I think you've done some work on that interchange.
We have, and there has been some fairly aggressive specific plans adopted up in the vicinity of the 10 freeway. I think Cathedral City is has some very ambitious plans for a lot of the vacant land that stretches from Duval Interchange all the way across through the Des Palmes Interchange to the Landau Interchange. We had gotten to a draft traffic study of conditions with and without the Duval Interchange, and what we found is that if you don't build that interchange and those visions for development up in that area occur, the Des Palmes Interchange will not function properly, it will become deficient. There will be deficiencies on the freeway main line as well, resulting from the amount of traffic trying to get on and off the freeway at the limited number of access points that there are today.
Thank you.
So, to put it in context from our perspective, the reason this Duval Interchange is now needed is because Cathedral City has big plans for across the 10th. But it impacts our city because that's the city, that's the line between our two cities. And on our side of the city, it's all residential. Duval on this side of the 10 was not designed to be a wider road, and now we're going to have a big, huge traffic move going right through our residential neighborhood. So that's why we're opposed to the intersection. But if the intersection is going to happen, it doesn't make sense to make us pay both for that intersection and pay for a larger than 4.3% share of Des Palmes. So the calculations come out correctly because ultimately we're going to be paying for two intersections. So why should we double pay? That's our position.
I guess, Carlton, I'd like to know how you calculate the residents of Rancho Moreno moving around in and out of the valley. Because they don't use Bob Hope, and they're not going to use Des Palmes, and they don't use Monterey. And so I'm figuring they must all have helipads somewhere. So help me understand how they get in and out of the valley.
Well, the Blitzes used helicopters.
There you go.
There is a precedent for that.
There are several hundred vehicles that come up Duval Drive to at least Ramon Road, regardless of whether there's an interchange in Duval Drive or not. What changes at that point is if there is no Duval interchange, the residents of Rancho Mirage, particularly those headed towards the west, are going to have to go and suffer through the Des Palmes interchange deficiencies, along with many residents of Cathedral City.
I'm talking today, in today's world, how are those residents getting up and down the I-10 freeway to get into their city? And then there's a 20% increase with Section 19, and the 3 million square feet of retail space, and the 500 hotel rooms. What interchange are they going to use? They're not going to use Bob Hope. They're not going to use Duval. They're not going to use Des Palmes. They're not going to be Duval. They're not going to use Monterey. What did you calculate they're going to use?
We definitely need to be clear. The traffic model that's being used now is based on socioeconomic projections of growth out to 2035. So there's 25 years worth of growth in there. I haven't tried to check and see just how much of the entire Section 19 development is included in the traffic model, but I don't think that there's any anticipation at the regional level that there's going to be 3 million square feet of commercial space absorbed in that area by 2035.
For the 500-room hotel.
That, again,
so is any of that in your model?
The data in our report, the model data has been reviewed at the local level as it was developed, and then there's been a subsequent review that we've followed up on, made sure that the comments that were made by the cities, particularly Palm Springs, were in fact addressed in the changes to the data.
Are those elements in your model?
I have to sit down and look at the data with you after the meeting. Can't say that.
Okay, we do have, you had...
If there's not going to be any change to the numbers, then I'll withdraw my motion. Now, we're not going to take out the wall. It makes no sense. I'm just trying to get the project passed and moved on.
And I'm trying to find out if they've taken into account the hotel, the 500-room hotel.
Can I understand, Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'll make a motion to approve staff recommendation.
Second.
And who was that second?
Stone.
Okay, we do have a motion on the floor by Mayor Cunier and a second by Supervisor Stone. We're going to do another roll call.
Cathedral City?
No.
Coachella?
Cathedral State.
Stain?
Yeah.
Okay. Desert Hot Springs?
Yes.
Indian Wells?
Yes.
Indio?
Yes.
La Quinta?
Yes.
Palm Desert?
No.
Palm Springs?
Aye.
Ranch and Mirage?
Yes.
Riverside County 3rd District?
Yes.
Riverside County 5th District?
Yes.
The motion carries.
Okay, not everybody's going to be happy. Moving on now to item H, support of Assembly Bill 880, which is in the Stanley and Perez to reopen the upper portion of the Moran Mohan Rani Trail.
And Tony Graziani with Assemblyman Stanley's office.
I didn't get a card from Tony, but I do have one from Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing our office this opportunity.
Oh,
I'm here on behalf of the Assembly. How are you?
Okay, Tony. Now I know.
We're good now? Okay. I'm here on behalf of Assemblyman Standy, as you are aware. He's in Sacramento working on legislation. Assemblyman Estandi introduced Assembly Bill 880 in an overwhelming response to the community's concern over the Department of Fish and Game's decision to close the upper portion of the Mohan Rani Trail. Our office strongly believes that the Department of Fish and Game overreached their authority in this decision without first conducting the proper study required by the Coachella Valley Multi-Species Habitat Plan. Furthermore, after hearing from specialized biologists who have intimate interaction with the acorn sheep habitat area, our office is concerned that there are critical discrepancies and inconsistencies in the flawed data relied upon to make this decision. Data will be provided by our office to support that the opening of the top of the Mohan Rani will not have a negative impact on the sheep population. It is our intent to bring forth testimony through the Senate Environmental Quality Committee that will support our office's position that the upper portion of the bump and grind can and should be made available for recreational purposes. The support of CBAG in all of the cities is crucial to this effort. Not only are there benefits to our constituents, but the bump and grind trail has attracted interest from international recreational users and scientists who rely upon access to this trail and others for further scientific research. I'm here asking you for your support. CBAG, as a regional body, has consistently taken action on issues of this magnitude, and it's our office's hope that CBAG will take the lead in supporting Assembly Bill 880. Accompanying me this evening is Sylvia Paz from Assemblyman Perez's office. And she has a few words as well. Thank you.
Good evening, members of the Executive Committee, Lucilia Paz with Assemblymember Ryan Perez. Assemblymember Perez has joined Assemblyman Brian Sandy in authoring AB-880. When we learned that the closure was going to happen, members of the community approached our office. Our office took the challenge of hiking the bump and grind, so the assembly member is aware of the interest at stake. In seeing the lack of evidence or sighting of sheep in the trail, the assembly member is asking for your support. Thank you.
Good evening.
I'm Blaine Carrion, and I've been working on this bumping grind issue.
Blaine, one apology. For those that are interested in speaking, if you could fill out the cards, green cards. Joanna, where do we have those? Sorry about that, Blaine.
We're here tonight to ask CBAG for its support of AD 880, sponsored by the Standy and Perez. When we first became involved in this issue almost a year ago, we were reminded that for many people inside this room, actually, that we were not biologists. We haven't attempted to be biologists, but we have been trying to play the role as fact finders, and that's what we've been trying to do. Well, 6 months ago, the Denver Sun editorial board urged Tigers to respect the gate in their editorial. But at the same time, demanded the Department of Fish and Game provide the scientific data to justify the closure. And now, last Friday, the Denver Sun editorial board endorsed DFG's position with no scientific information being provided. In fact, Charles Nisbet, who's a member of the Chilbally Conservation Commission's subcommittee on trails, wrote an accompanying article to show DFG's lack of scientific foundation. And we have provided that to you in this handout. When we asked President Standy to get involved in this issue 6 months ago, it took them all this time to do their own investigation. They didn't just take our word for it. They actually looked at the issues on the ground before they sponsored this legislation. Tonight, I'd briefly like to take you through some of the conditions on the ground using some satellite images. Satellite image that's being shown now is the critical habitat for bighorn sheep identified by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. In 2001, the United States Fish and Wildlife Service designated 844,000 acres of critical habitat for bighorn sheep from Palm Springs to the Mexican border. In 2009, that was reduced to 376,000 acres. On this map, the acres shown west of Highway 74 that are critical habitat total about 8,960 acres. The bump and grind is the yellow dot on that map, and the gate that DFG has erected is the red line. And the six blue dots that you see there are all man-made watering holes. This now, the sheep occurrences as reported by the Department of Fish and Game, I think many of you know that we had to actually file a suit, a writ of mandate, to force DFG to provide this information. If you look at these sheep occurrences, 90% of these sheep occurrences are occurring on 900 acres out of the 8,960 acres. And where are they? There are six water holes, not near the bump and grind. DFG continuously claims that human interaction is detrimental to bighorn sheep. And we put to you that without the human interface, we would not have the population that we do. This image shows where the largest amount of sheep activity is taking place. This is in Bradley Canyon behind the Thunderbird Heights. This is a man-made watering hole looking down on Mr. Martin's home. Many of you might be interested to know that the same sheep that we are protecting are being hunted on both ends of the valley. Zone 4 is the area east of Mecca, and Zone 5 is northwest of Palm Springs. Hunting is allowed by permit only, but these are the same Nelson bighorn sheep that are in these hills. 9 hunting zones are in California, with a total population of 1,460. The peninsula ranges have a total population of 1,200. To get an idea of where the hunting zones are in relationship to the valley, you can see the yellow images there. Zone 4 is on the right, Zone 5 is on the left. And you can see how close it is to Mecca, Zone 4 is, and how close Zone 5 is to Palm Springs. This last image is of the Shea Trail. The Shea Trail was closed in 2005. We read the EIRs that were associated with this closure. It was agreed in the EIR that Shea Trail really didn't have any important wildlife reasons for closure, and it was left to the discretion of the Department of Fish and Game, and their discretion was to close it. And if you look on that map, in fact, you have it in that handout where that circle is, where Shea Trail is, there are no sheep. And the EIR specifically says that leave it to the discretion of the Department of Fish and Game, and that's was their discretion proposal. So what we're asking of you tonight is for CBAG to support our efforts so that we can go to Sacramento and argue our case. We will argue the science when we get to Sacramento. We weren't going to come here tonight. We have a wildlife biologist that we're putting on board. We weren't going to come here to argue that tonight. What we want is just your support of the citizens of the valley. We will carry the water. We'll go up to Sacramento, and we will have that fight on the science when we get there. But I think it's important that when we go there, we have the support of all the communities of the valley. Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak on this subject?
Move to approve the bill.
Second.
Discussion.
Okay, wait a minute. Motion by Supervisor Stone, second by Mayor Miller of India. Discussion.
I guess I'm not going to make a motion. First question for the City of Palm Desert. Has the City of Palm Desert passed your own individual city resolution in support of the bill?
No.
Okay. Typically, maybe not every other city, but typically in our city, the City Council takes the first step before we even consider coming to a group like this. So, the second question, who has the ultimate jurisdiction here? Is it the Fish and Game or the BLM?
It's Department of Fish and Game,
that third, Jim, has the ultimate jurisdiction. Okay. I'm just nothing against trails, but I think the gentleman who just spoke should be making that presentation to every individual city council in the valley first, instead of coming right to CBAG, where you have to debate whether this is truly in under the role of the jurisdiction of your plane here. I don't see that it is. I think this has potential. I'm not asking you to speak, sir.
No, when Tom is done.
Oh. I think this has potential to pit cities versus cities. I have an issue right now going to Palm Springs, a very big issue with the BLM and with my good friend down there, the Agua Caliente Band of Cui Indians. It's a very serious issue. I'm not looking for my state legislators to fix it. I'm not looking for CBAG to fix it. If I were to come here to CBAG and ask them to fix it, the potential for conflict for cities like Rancho Mirage, which also has a casino, right? If things weren't going well, I think this is bad policy, folks. I do not think this is where we should be going. We passed the multi-species habitat plan, which protects the sheep. I'm more about process here, not the science. It's just the process that we are following. It's not the process that we follow Palm Springs. I just don't think this sets good policy for this body. The City of Palm Springs will be abstaining on this issue. My council has never had a chance to take a look at it. We have not been asked to. And I would encourage, although I know there's a lot of support, I've read it in the paper, to think about the policy and the process, and perhaps a few other cities might abstain on this item.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
I too have a problem voting on this issue tonight, only because my council has not had an opportunity to vet the issue. And similar to your situation here a month ago, where you had an issue and you voted without your full council's approval on the issue, as I recall, something to that effect. And I at least there was some confusion. What I would like to see happen is for us to delay the vote on this issue until all of us have had an opportunity to go back to our council and vet it. I mean, it's a very sensitive issue, be sensitive on our city. I would not want to be so presumptive to think that that my vote tonight would be what the full council would like to have. And so I think if
we were to delay, if you can vote a delay, if it can be delayed until the next meeting.
We'll be back for 2 months, but we'll meet again.
We do meet in about 30 days. We do have a meeting early June.
And then that way everyone can get to their city councils and come back with fully informed as to what the decision might be.
Why don't we ask, I'm not sure the timing from the assemblymen's offices, whether there's a hearing coming up, if they're looking for support sooner rather than later. Perhaps one of the offices could address that question.
Tony?
Sylvia.
Okay, so for AB 880, the timeline is July 5th. We have until July 5th, which is the last day to hear the bill in policy committee. It's already in the Senate. It doesn't mean that it will, it still doesn't have a hearing date, so the hearing can happen any time between June and July.
And while you're up there, maybe AB 1545, if it is a policy issue, the timing on that one as well, Sylvia?
Or 1545.
Which is the next item on the agenda?
Yes. It's June 1st. That's the last day to pass bills out of the first house. So since it originated in the assembly, it's still in the assembly. So June 5th would be, June 1st would be the last day to pass it, except that we do have an appropriations committee hearing set for May the 2nd.
So from your office standpoint, it would be okay to delay CVEC's consideration of either of those items for 30 days?
Well, we are trying to collect our letters of support as soon as possible. It does make a difference when the committee hears them. Given that AB 880 still does not have a policy committee hearing date, maybe by June, it would still be in there in a timely fashion for AB 1545. The deadline is sooner, so for this one, it would be a little bit more urgent.
Our next meeting is June 4th, just so that everybody is aware of that. I just want to provide the committee with options. I know there is a motion on the table.
I have a couple comments, and I think it's very ironic. We're being asked to support a piece of legislation, and yet we're saying we need to take the information back to our city councils, but when we're making decisions to allocate $40 million to a trail, we don't want to go through that process, or we don't have to go through that process. So when we're committing our cities to support the Roy Resource Center for $103,000, we don't ask to take that information back to our city councils. We make the decisions here, and then we go back and we try to figure out how we can make our city councils agree to that. So I just want to make sure that we're not speaking out of both sides of our mouth when we're speaking on issues, but we're saying, hey, we're being asked to support a piece of legislation here that is vital to all the residents of the Coachella Valley, and why can't the mayors take a position on this? And again, you know, when we're being asked to support a $40 million trail, $20 million for Measure $8 to build this Whitewater Trail, which is a great concept, we're not going back and asking our city councils. We're making the decision here and then going back and saying, oh, by the way, this is the decision we made. So I just wanted to make those comments because I think this is a pressing issue and I think we should support it. It doesn't hurt us. We know thousands of people have come out to support the Bump and Grind Trail. I mean, those are my comments.
I know this is a AB 880 is a sensitive topic, so I don't really want to necessarily talk about whether CVAC chooses to support it tonight or not, but I do have a question with respect to the procedures and the practice of this organization. But similar to Mayor Garcia's concern, it's not been common practice that I've seen that this, the considerations of this body are first sent to the city councils and then brought to this organization as an executive committee. Consideration for letters of support have even been brought to the policy committees for recommendation to the executive committee for a support letter. So now we're asking it to go the other way around. We're just not consistent with the requests of us for letters of support and with what Mayor Garcia indicated, which is when we commit the other cities to funding or allocating capital funds, you know, the decisions are made at this body. So it doesn't matter to me which way we do it, but the way that it's being recommended to be done tonight is not the normal practice. So I'm kind of confused.
Madam Chair, well, perhaps not in the city over at Coachella,
But in the city of Palm Springs, we had a great length meeting over the path. And my council gave me direction on the path. So I use that as an example to make a point. I think it's truly unfortunate. Every city has their own process. And this is the process that we go through. Mr. Nastandy's fact sheet says 100 to 200 people a day, which can translate into thousands. I think we're overstepping. The fish and game doesn't trump federal law. And this was in 1998 under the Federal Endangered Species List. And when some legislator in Sacramento is going, what the hell am I doing voting on this on a trail? City of Palm Desert hasn't even done an independent resolution. We can debate that all that you want. And then you're tied up in litigation. Federal law will trump Department of Fish and Game. So we're going to waste taxpayers' dollars under litigation. So I respect everyone has different viewpoints on this. As I said, we will abstain for those very reasons.
Madam Chair, I'd like to address at least Mayor Garcia. Just to let you know, our city did not vote in favor of the trail. We have not. We voted to move. I voted to go for the study to determine whether or not we want to vote for the trail. I don't know about your city or other cities, but it's very sensitive in our city that the mayor always vote the consensus of our council. And since we don't have a consensus of our council, I don't think I've ever voted on anything here that was in disagreement with our council. In fact, our council norms require us to get council approval before we vote on issues, or they can, in fact, remove you from office from the position if you did go against their wishes. So I'm not prepared to do that until I get a consensus of my council. However, having said that, I take a different position than Mayor Pinier. I mean, we probably will vote, I suspect, in favor of it. But I don't want to take that position tonight without having had the opportunity to address it with them and let them decide. Because I come here not as an individual. I come here as a representative of our city.
I just want to make one comment. If it's a matter of pass or no pass, because we haven't had the opportunity to vet it with our prospective councils, and delaying it till the next CBAG meeting does not injure the process in Sacramento, then it seems logical that we may go that route. But there is a motion and a second.
I'll move that we continue this until...
We have a motion and a second to approve staff recommendation. This was discussion.
Okay. But you have an alternative motion to that.
Or ask the mayor to pull the motion off the table.
Right. But as mayors of our city, at least in our city, we're allowed to support a issue without going to a council on more sides. I could support it as the mayor of India, not for the city, but as the mayor, if I wanted to, just like we can support any other action as an individual. So maybe if that's what it needs to be, maybe the mayors of the cities that want to go forward as the mayors, as the letter comes to the party, instead of that, and the ones that, like Mr. Queenay, would like to go back and vet it with his city, go ahead and do it that way.
Madam Chair, I'd like to offer a friendly amendment to the motion, and that would be that dogs would be disallowed from the bump and grind. Whoever made the motion, is that a
supervisor? Sorry, supervisor.
We're in Congress.
Now, wait a minute. You made the motion, correct?
No, I'm a supervisor. Madam Chair, I see a lot of differing opinions here. Kind of the outsider here trying to fit in. Let me just say this, that I sit on a number of governmental committees, SCAG, WRTOG, RCA, CBAG, and our board gives us the authority to do what we feel is in the best interest of the county. And I guarantee you that if we have to take back every decision that we make, and we're talking about a support letter to allow a trail to be enhanced and we believe not affect the sheep, I just don't see the necessity. At least I don't feel like I need to go back to the board to, even though I've got a fellow board member here, to codify that. I mean, if we don't go back and codify every decision that we make in all these sub-governmental agencies, otherwise we never get anything done. That's why the board has appointed us, your council has appointed you, to do what you think is in the best interest of your cities. And I understand if you've got a policy decision that hampers you from doing that, but this is a representative form of government at a different level. So, I support the motion. There's a second. We can vote it up, vote it down, and
further discussion.
We can continue it.
Madam Chair, this is not about authority. Whether I have authority, I obviously have authority. This is about the process that I'm undertaken with this, which I do not agree with. I do not believe it's within the role of CBAC. Not that I have the authority or not. I absolutely, all the mayors have that authority, but it's not how I would have done it.
There's a motion to step on the table. Call for the question.
Okay, yeah, we have a motion and a second on the table. So at this point, I think we should take a roll call vote. And the motion is to approve staff recommendation.
It's to support.
I mean to support, yeah, to write the letter of support.
There is no staff.
That's right. To support, to write the letter of support.
Requested by the two similar.
Right.
Can we go,
Cindy?
Yes.
Coachella?
Yes.
Deborah Huffman?
Yes.
Andy Wells?
Abstain.
Andy O?
Yes.
La Quinta?
Yes.
Palm Desert?
Yes.
Palm Springs?
Abstain.
Ranch Mirage?
Yes.
Riverside County 3rd District?
Yes.
Riverside County 5th District?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Now we're going to move into support of AB 1545. Sylvia?
Good evening. 1545 is the Bi-National Economic Development Bank. And I'm here to ask for a letter of support for this bill to provide a little bit of background. In November 2011, Assembly Member Perez held a hearing focused on economic development in Imperial and Coachella Valleys and how infrastructure, trade, and business development affected the economic prosperity of the border region. A key finding from the hearing related to the importance of modern logistical networks in linking rural border manufacturers and businesses to a global supply chain and consumer base. It was reported at that hearing that financing these infrastructure linkages is challenging and that there was a need for a quality facilitator to help put infrastructure financing packages together. AB 1545 addresses this need. By authorizing the IFAC to establish and participate in a binational financing authority for the purpose of facilitating and supporting the economic development of communities within 120 miles on both sides of the border region. That would include the Coachella Valley in its entirety. As part of this bill, the IBANC may enter into an agreement with any federal, state, local, or foreign economic and infrastructure authority for the purpose of developing projects that include but are not limited to pre-development, economic development, goods movement-related infrastructure, the benefits of the border region. This bill does not authorize the expenditure of U.S. taxpayers' money to be used in Mexico. Again, what the bill does is it authorizes the IBANC to be able to enter into agreements with international entities in putting together financing packages. We do have, well, the bill has already passed out of its first committee, and that was on April 17th, and we have a local support from Calexico County Enterprise Zone, City of Imperial, Coachella Valley Economic Partnership, the County of Imperial, Coachella Valley Enterprise Zone, and the Riverside County Foreign Trade Commission. I will take any questions.
Mayor DeRosa?
I have one question. Sally, can you tell me how the Sally would come with 120 miles? What was the nexus of that?
Yes, well, the National Bank only covers 60 miles. In conversations that we had at the CIVA, the Legislative Committee, the question was raised, why only 60 miles? Because in that case, the Coachella Valley is not covered. So that's how we came up with 120 miles.
So 120 miles from the border, north
of
both
sides, and San Diego, regions of San Diego.
But Coachella Valley is outside that 60-mile boundary.
No, so that is why this bill would place it at 120, so that the Coachella Valley can qualify.
Okay, and they're 120 miles south of the border also?
Correct.
But our money does not go south of the border?
No, so the way the infrastructure bank is funded is through bonds or program loan repayments, interest earnings, IBAC fees. None of that take any of the general funds from the state. A lot of it is private investment.
I move approval.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, we'll take a roll call vote.
Peter City?
Yes.
Coachella?
Yes.
Desert Hot Springs?
Yes.
Indian Wells?
Abstain.
Indio?
Yes.
La Quinta?
Yes.
Palm Desert?
Yes.
Palm Springs?
Abstain.
Rancho Mirage?
Yes.
Riverside County Fair District?
No.
Riverside County Fifth District?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Okay. Announcements. Announcements, upcoming meetings. Our next meeting is here on June 4th at 10:30, and the General Assembly will be held on Monday, June 25th, at the Classic Club.
Not Islam Desert.
At the Classic Club, and the fee for that will be $50 per person. Okay, with that, meeting adjourned.